Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on webinar is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yeah, I'm good.
Where are you? Different background.
Unless you extended
your office, have you?
Well, I'm rebuilding the house I normally live in, and this is the one I rent. So
you got flooded, didn't you? That's right. Yes.
Oh yeah. So we're raising. You know what? When you have an event that hits you hard like that, you just have to fight back. So we're raising all the floors. We're raising the ceilings, and that means we have to raise the roof as well. So
raise the roof. Yay. Yeah. okay, so but it's what I think. I don't know whether it's more reported now or whatever, but climate change is happening, isn't it? The extremes, like for example, we've gone from, like I say, you know, the floods you had there, probably the worst for a long time, and then now we're having the hottest spring ever or the driest spring ever. And a lot of people say, oh, that's just the seasons, it happens to this. But we are hitting more records, aren't we, all the time? So you've got to say that's got to signify something. I know you get these climate change deniers, but thinking, how can we keep beating records all the time? And those records, you know, do stretch back quite a bit, you know?
No, you're right. And but we had an El Nino year. Now I think we're in El Nina. This is all being governed by the temperature of the water in the Gulf of Mexico. But of course, the weather is really complex, and small changes make big differences to everybody.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it translates into sort of resources and metals and all that stuff, because there's, of course, a big push for renewables. I tell you what I'm picking your brain on, John, is uranium, if you know anything about that, because I've seen a huge amount of pickup in the interest now, but apparently a 42% pickup in small modular reactor applications going forward. Mm. And of course, there's a lot of people talking about AI data centers. I didn't know this until I did some research recently. A Google search, of course, everyone does. An AI search takes 10 times the energy of a Google search. And they're saying all these big tech companies now who want to do land grab here, to be the go-to for AI, for data centers, they need energy because these are sort of power-hungry things, AI sort of processes that go through. And they say, okay, they're trying to use traditional thermal sources like gas, coal, whatever. But of course, they've got all these zero-carbon targets. So they are, some of them are building sort of solar farms, wind farms. But of course, it's not consistent, and they need consistent baseload power. And so they're saying the go-to now for that, to additional help, will be in the maybe 2030 onwards, will be small modular reactors you can just chuck on next to these data centers. And of course, there's huge riches at stake, because if you look at who won the Google search, or who won, we even call it Google, who won the internet search, it was Google. And who knew Google before, the 2020 or 2000s? And now they're, almost $1 trillion, or more than $1 trillion company. So you realize if you land grab new technology like this, it's going to be big in the future, which AI is. You've got, a road to riches. And so it's all about, comes down to energy, doesn't it?
You're right. It is a land grab. And there's nothing new about small modular reactors in that every time you look at a nuclear submarine, it's got a nuclear, it is a small nuclear reactor. Yeah. Same with aircraft carriers and things like that. These things are often, I think the American ones powered with small nuclear reactors. It's not a new thing. It's just, it's a new thing for governments to be looking at it in this way.
Yeah, and also, have you found that, since it happened in, was it Fukushima in Japan, there was really negative press around nuclear reactors, all that stuff, and Chernobyl and that. But of course, the Chernobyl was an old, very old reactor that wasn't sort of maintained properly. But with Fukushima in Japan, it was nothing to do with the reactors. It was a tsunami that breached the walls. It's basically not building the walls high enough. So you see now companies and countries looking on nuclear as more favorable because it's got that base load of power 24 hours a day, you know, as much as you want. The density of power from uranium is huge. So you're seeing now, in fact, there's no real safety worries about it. It's just, and there's lots of, is it, countries and companies really paying more attention and looking upon, you know, nuclear power as more favorably than it was. It was a bit of a stigma attached to it, wasn't it, after the Fukushima the disaster. But that wasn't down to the power plant on nuclear or the way it was run. It was just down to the walls not being built big enough.
Well, the Japanese then closed a lot of nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
And that meant they didn't use uranium. So the uranium price collapsed. And in fact, since then, it has recovered quite a lot. There were some stockpiles built up, which I think the world is working through at the moment. But remember, the Japanese are building about 50 new nukes at the moment.
Yeah.
They are already the world's largest power producer, and they are really working to upgrade their grid so that they can connect all this stuff together, the hydro, the wind, the solar, and the new nukes. And I think that's why the Chinese have invested so much in building copper smelting capacity. And they are fighting so hard to gain copper concentrates in the world market that copper concentrate prices are at extraordinary levels. They are paying copper producers to take their copper and convert it into their copper concentrates, convert it into copper metal. We've never really seen this before in the world. This has been going on for over 6 months now. And the prices they're paying to get those concentrates in preference to everybody else is just extraordinary.
Is it? So this is copper futures price here. As you can see, let's put it to the ton here. And it's pretty much traded pretty mid-range between for 2025. You know, it did start at $8,800 a ton. It shot up to pretty much 11,500. It's come back a bit. We almost revisit the low here, but we're back at sort of 10,168. But like I say, there's one thing that's consistent here, isn't it? You talk about all these different commodities, but copper's using old world tech and increasingly more so in new world tech, you know?
I think you'll find there's a general upward trend in copper. Definitely there's more use coming down the line or more demand. I mean, remember the Spanish power grid went offline.
Yeah.
And they will have to strengthen and add to their power grid in order to stabilize it. I mean, for example, the French cut them off. As soon as the French thought there was a problem in Spain, they just cut them off from their nuclear reactors. Although that was a protection mechanism. They didn't want the French grid going down as well. And it clearly was a very complex thing. But at the end of the day, it's about not having enough network capacity.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Also, worth looking at is that we've talked about this a long time. The gold is outperforming. It's pulling back a little bit here, but as you can see, it hit the futures close there, 3,400 pretty much. Spiked up a bit higher to 3,500. It came back down though. But I think we may see some port here. I mean, previously, you can see a previous high there and on 50-day moving average. I don't think it's ended. I think we'll consolidate for a while, the gold run, do you? I think it'll go up higher.
I think you're right. I think there's another leg in this. As the dollar weakens, gold prices are likely to go up. There seems to be ongoing buying activity in China, but it's quite natural if perhaps the Chinese have decided to pull back for a little bit. You know, it always takes the market a little while to start getting used to higher levels, and there's always a bit of profit taking at the top.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when gold rises, it never really falls off a cliff afterwards. It consolidates in a range for a while. Like you see that from the run from, 2000s pretty much up to 2100, and it consolidated for like quite a few years from 2020 to 2023. It went sort of sideways up and down, and then went another run in 2024. So it may have to go sideways for a while, but it never really collapses, is it, gold? Like I say, it's a finite amount of resource, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, the easy stuff has been got, and now it's anyway. Let's look at individual stocks, John. You were saying about Cornish Metals. There was a Royal Visitor, was there, at Cornish Metals recently?
Well, Cornish had a royal visit last Friday. Princess Anne went to go and have a look at the mine, and to her great credit, she put on the health and safety gear. She went and had a look at the mine, and the great thing is that the new management there are accelerating the pumping to dewater the pit or dewater the mine, and they're refurbishing the shaft and they're getting on with the job.
Yeah, well, maybe she's after a real job. Maybe she's looking for some work, was she? Maybe. I wonder
I'd love to see them get a royal warrant or two, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For what though? How could a tin ring? Maybe. Maybe they should have given a tin ring or something like that. Tin bangle, or whatever they got there, and get it wrong. But I was wondering, did she have to wear a helmet?
Absolutely. All the health and safety gear, the self rescuer, the lamp on the top of the hat, everything.
It's got a really bouffanty. I think that's protection enough, isn't it? Have you seen it? I don't see how she got a helmet on that, to be honest.
There are no exceptions for this, Justin.
They say, okay, Mom, you don't need you got protection enough there. That bouffant style you've got, that's fine. But, okay, so, they're dewatering the mine still, are they? How long has that been going on?
Well, look, they didn't need to dewater the whole mine to start with. There's a little bit of water that comes into the mine anyway. So there's no point dewatering the levels until you actually want to get in there and work on them. Mm. So that's why they slowed it up a bit. And also electricity prices were particularly high during COVID. So they slowed it down just because it was sensible not to spend quite so much money on that. But no, in the meantime, they're full speed ahead and the world wants more tin. In fact, there's a deal I noticed today between an American tin alloy producer and a company in Rwanda, and they've signed some kind of offtake agreement for the supply of tin in the presence of someone from the United States government, which has also been funding the project. Now, the reason we're noticing that is because we are brokers and advisors to Aterian. Which also has a number of tin, tungsten, and lithium licenses in Rwanda, and in joint venture with Rio Tinto, which is quite an unusual type of cooperative agreement. In that, for Rio Tinto to get involved with an exploration company that is still relatively early stage is very unusual.
We're showing a Terry that's just a 5 million market cap. So it's
exactly. Yeah. So shall we say everybody's interested in tin and Rwanda is a good place for it, and Aterian have a number of pretty meaningful projects out there. So we're looking for good things going forward.
Okay. What's happening at by the way, I do like the chart there of Cornish Metals, because what it's done is it's hit a bottom here, rallied in a series of higher highs, higher lows. It has plateaued, but it's coming on again now. It's coming back up above the 200-day moving average. So maybe we'll see a new high there soon. What's happening with Kavango? That's come off a bit. What's going on there?
I think people are just waiting for results. They were doing a lot of drilling, and we're waiting for the assays. So I think, investors, time is always a bit of a killer for investors. The longer people wait, the more reasons they find to move on somewhere else. And it's just a waiting game right now to get those results, see what they mean, and then work out the mine plans for the different, there are four different projects on what's called Hillside. One is expected to be an open pit and another is expected to be an underground mine. So we wait for the results so we can see what the assay grades are and where it's going.
Some support in the chart at 0.635, and maybe a break above a 9 would be good because it's done that before. It's gapped up there, it's had support there. So, okay, that's that. That's Kavango. Kodal Minerals, again, it's come off a little bit. Are there sort of tariffs and everything? Have you seen resource companies take a hit due to these tariffs, the chat about tariffs and aluminium and steel and all that stuff?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the whole sector took a hit.
Everything did, really. For good reason,
because, you know, with Trump threatening to impose huge tariffs on China and everybody else, that in itself would slow global growth quite a lot. Now, Trump has rolled back on a lot of that. So we're now looking at 50% tariffs on China. But the good thing is that at least the Chinese and US delegations are talking to each other in Switzerland. And so the market now expects a sensible deal to be done because what's happening is Trump seems to have rolled back off all this crazy rhetoric. The UK got the first deal, which is nice. Thank you, Donald. Now we seem to have Syria has suddenly got a zero tariffs, but I don't think there's much going on between Syria and the US other than politics. And it looks like everybody else has got a chance of doing sensible deals.
What's happening with Kodal? Did you see you met up with the guys recently?
Yeah. We saw management in the week. Bernard is in London, and look, it's going well. They're producing spodumene. They're just waiting for the final sign-off from the government for their export permit. And of course, this is always a risk, but we don't think there's a problem with it. We just think it's various people in the ministry, just double-checking that everything's been done in the right way before they sign the permit. So there's a lot of spodumene, 5.5%, we believe, which is good quality, waiting at site and waiting to get trucked down to their chosen port in the Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's a great story. I mean, given that there's been a lot of trouble in Mali with the gold sector, certain gold mining companies perhaps might not have paid as much tax over the years as they should have done, and the government's been chasing them for reparations. Kodal itself also had to sign up to the new Minerals Resource Act, which was brought in 2023, but everybody dragged their feet over it. Kodal actually did it really well. They sat down with the government, they negotiated all the things that they needed to do. They paid a bit of extra cash because the new Minerals Resource Act was just slightly more punitive. And I think everybody's happy. So well done, Kodal.
Yeah. What leverage do you have when you sit down with the government, though? They can just say, well, take it or leave it, can't they?
They all speak French, and from my experience with the government, if they're happy, they generally offer you a few camels or something like that.
I don't know. I've got a nice sized garden, but I don't know what I'd do with them. To be honest, what would you do?
Well, the thing is, the question is one hump or two, really.
Okay. What's next? Orosol. That shot up recently. Look at that. It's gone from literally 2.6 pence up to 13 pence, without 10 pence. But nevertheless, a multi-bagger there. What's happening since the September last year?
There's a recent press release that showed a channel sample, which is as good as a drill hole in many respects. They're normally a horizontal rather than vertical. But if you're in this sort of rugged terrain, you can get a lot of information off channel samples. This is an unusually long channel sample. It's 105 meters long, and it shows 1.15 grams a ton of gold. Now, that's a decent intersection by any standard. So very pleased to see that result. Company's quite well funded. It's got nearly $2.5 million of cash as of end of February. So, yeah, it's looking quite good. They were in joint venture with a major company that pulled out, but that was more to do with M&A action at the major. The major was taken over by Newmont, and this means they got the project back. So I think that's fantastic news.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't have to wait around for some big company to decide what to do anymore. They can just get on with it.
Yeah. Well, could be some support here, or a bit lower, maybe. Okay. That's. That's or so. What's next? Oriol, O-double-R. Let's stick together.
Yeah. Oriol, they're there in Cameroon.
Mm.
And again, they've been drilling away. They've got a resource increase at the Bibemi project. That was about 23% rise. So that's quite good. It's not a huge project. It's about 500,000 ounces of gold, but it's quite nice. It's a good, we kind of call it a good starter. It may or may not prove to be economic at that size. I would have thought 500,000 ounces grading just over 2 grams a ton sounds pretty good. And they also have another project. What's it called? MBE, it's called. They had a fantastic drill hole there for 87 meters at 1.36 grams a ton. That's quite nice. We'll take that any day of the week. So that's all beginning to go a little bit better for Oriol. I mean, they went through a period of not really delivering any good results. Suddenly this is looking a bit better. So I think they're, you have to put in a lot of effort sometimes before you get decent grade. It's all about looking in the right place.
Yeah. So what's companies now sort of in the gold field, in the gold space? It must be quite bullish, isn't it? For those, are you seeing more interest?
Gold prices are $1,000 a ton higher than they were. I mean, that all feeds through to the bottom line. Oil prices are low, so your costs are held down. Gold miners are worth so much more than they were 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And we don't see that gold price really. It's not going back to $2,000 a dollars an ounce. It's staying up here one way or another.
Yeah, I think it's going higher. Sol Gold, what's happening there?
Well, they had a bit of a change of management. They seem to do this once in a while. Remember, it's backed by BHP, Newcrest, and also the Chinese company that's bought a chunk of Sol Gold as well. And look, they're making progress. They're de-risking the project. They've got a lot of cash. They spent about $27 million on the project for the 9 months to the end of March, and they have a closing cash balance of $19 million. So they're busy boys. They're working hard at it. I've got the feeling the Chinese are going to come in and buy some more.
Okay. Yeah, because it's funny, isn't it? But, it was funny that the to and froing over China, US, because they both need each other, and it's of course the Chinese apparently are shuttering factories, temporarily shutting them down because of lack of demand. But they can take more pain for longer, can't they, the Chinese,
Yeah, I think my assessment of the situation, and it's a sort of rough assessment, is the Chinese could probably support a 30% tariff. They produce things cheap enough to actually pay a 30% tax, effective tax, to the US and carry and keep most of the factories going. I may be a bit out with that. Well, I'm sure I am a bit out with that number. From what I've read on the BBC, they were talking about a factory, where there's a factory that's very happy that the tariff has gone back to 50%, and that means they can keep working. So maybe they're making money at that kind of tariff.
It's 30% now, isn't it? It's like they agreed on a 30% tariff, of course, from goods to America, and 10% the other way. So I don't know how that works. And of course, they can just manipulate the currency, can't they?
Look, I think there's going to be a lot of adjustment. China has had a lot of tariffs on US products for many, many years. They were tinkering around with them all the time. In Europe, or the UK, for example, we've got 20% VAT. I mean, Donald Trump could have just put 20% VAT on everything in the States and then subsidized his favorite industries. Mm-hmm. That would have, if he'd done what the UK government did. Do you remember VAT started at 5%? Mm-hmm. And then it got gradually increased. Okay, nobody liked it, but it wasn't such a huge deal each time it happened. If Trump had done that, then we wouldn't have had all this fuss.
I know. Well, I did liken it to like him setting, you know, fire to his house, pretty much, and then also someone's house, and then calling the fire brigade, but patting himself on the back that he called the fire brigade, saying, "Look, I called the fire brigade to put that out." So, but you started the fire, you fool. So yes, but if I hadn't called the fire brigade, it'd be burnt down by now. Are you glad I called the fire brigade? So it's like, why have you done that? Why have you created this chaos as the art of the deal? But I don't understand, you know, it's okay doing silly low ball or high ball offers in it when you took my real estate, you know, because you can do that and they can just walk away. It's not going to affect the global economy. But you can't do that on a global stage. It messes everything up. People lose jobs, businesses go through, you know, and I'm thinking, he's just applying that kind of logic, isn't he, in his book, The Art of the Deal, being really, you know, extreme with an offer.
Well, and yeah, just, the world is not just a property market, is it? And tariffs are not the same as property negotiations.
I remember reading his book years ago when I was a kid almost. I thought, the guy must be a master of marketing back then, because there was, you know, a young guy, you know, in the valleys of South Wales. How did this brash, you know, real estate New Yorker manage to get his book in my hands? You know, there's no internet back then. And I remember him buying, I think it was Mar-a-Lago. That had a price tag of something like 30 million at the time. And he bought it for 5 million. So I think apparently he offers even lower than that at the start. But so it can be done now again when you have distressed sellers. But that's not the same as the global, you know, trade, the world of trade is different. So, yeah, it's really sort of a bull in the China shop.
I have the feeling that Trump is learning on the job. If you look at what's happening now, it's definitely some of the wind has been taken out of his sails.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have a lot of victims people in the meantime, aren't you? Sort of suffering. And he didn't suffer. He's getting a free plane from Qatar. Sovereign Metals. What's happening here, John? It was going very nicely. It was building up a series of higher highs, higher lows. You can see it here, and then it's just fallen off a cliff a bit. What's happened?
This is, Justin, a buying opportunity. Extraordinaire, because they issued a load of stock just to make sure they've got a good cash pile to keep going with. They had plenty of cash anyway. They just decided to raise a load more. Rio Tinto, which owned 19.9%, didn't take part in the placing, so their stake slipped to 18.5%. There was a lot of bulletin board stuff, I am told, because I don't read these things, saying that Rio Tinto wasn't supporting the project anymore, which is complete rubbish. Rio's have got so much skin in the game on this one, more about management time than anything else. So Rio's, as far as I'm concerned, are heavily involved. They give lots and lots of advice on the environmental and social side of things, as well as the technical mining. The company is working in conjunction with Rio's to produce a definitive feasibility study. That'll come out sometime end of third quarter, maybe fourth quarter. At that point, Rio's get 180 days to decide whether they're going to be whether they're going to manage the project. Now, if Rio's decide to manage the project, and I think they will, then they're going to want to own the project. Now, Rio's probably sitting there thinking, oh, well, we're happy to pay 30% premium on whatever the share price is at the time. But this is the world's only proper rutile project right now. Rutile is worth generally 4 to 5 times the price of ilmenite. These are the feedstock minerals for titanium. The world wants more and more titanium, particularly more titanium metal, for aircraft, fighter aircraft, and drones. Drones are a big one, and robots will be another big one, because titanium metal is super light and super strong. Why would Rio's not want to own this? I mean, it would be crazy if they let it slip through their hands. There are no technical issues that we can see that would mean anyone would not want to do it. And the mining's, it's not just simple, but it's cheap. They're just going to dry mine this with yellow machinery. So it's as easy as it comes. Yes, of course, there's a risk. The government of Mali might start to mess people around, but we don't think so. Mali as a country is not rich. People are quite decent, but they could all do with probably a few more quid to help them. They are great supporters. When we met them in the fields, they are great supporters of British football. They're all wearing Manchester United and Liverpool football shirts. So when you go along and you say, oh, we're from England, because everyone always asks where you're from, they're very happy to talk to you. And, you know, it's actually a very nice country. So this project makes so much sense all round. And I really see this as a, this is an opportunity to buy the stock.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee the workers wearing Liverpool shirts are probably a bit happier than the ones wearing Man United shirts. Man United are number 16th in the Premier League and Liverpool number one. So it's funny there, you know, the good time to raise money, of course, always when you have some cash, isn't it? And when the share price is high, you know.
Exactly.
You don't want is when the share price is low and they've got no money, you go and you're distressed then. And then they get a real big tanking. But so they raise $40 million.
Yeah. Okay. And you know what? Sometimes the funds take a bit more stock in a placing than they really want to own. And then they put it back just to create liquidity. Mm-hmm. Management actually tell me they scaled back the bigger funds. I mean, they probably scaled back everybody, to be honest. So they thought there wouldn't be any loose stock around. But I think all this bulletin board stuff about Rio's not supporting the project has probably done a certain amount of damage to the share price. And actually, I think it's rubbish. I think Rio's just as interested in it now as they were 6 months ago.
Yeah. What you tend to find, though, is that there's a huge correlation, isn't there, between positive news when the share price goes up and negative news when the share price goes down. And you find, you know, that news resonates more, you know, on the upside, the positive news does. On the downside, the negative news does. And so whenever the share price drops to a certain extent, you see a place in that. People's, you know, negative news, oh, people start to worry, of course, because they're holding the stock and they start to worry. And then, but it's odd that, look at that. It had a high there on the 21st of March, started dropping off. And then 26th, they did a placing. I think there was some people knowing about that there, wasn't it? Something going on. But here we are. But you reckon that's an opportunity?
I'm confident. I'm thinking of buying some stock. So it's as simple as that.
Okay. And the last one, John, which we're going to disagree on, is Vesarion. In fact, on my website here is a macrocap database, right? And I type in Vesarion because I cover all macrocap companies with a market cap below 100 million generating revenue. And so this is just a summary of the company here, but what was the last of results? 30th and 9th, a 19% drop in revenue. Pre-tax loss increased by 70%. They got now net debt of 5.7. Everything went down. There's no forecast here. This is a bit of a note from Hugh, from SP Angel there. But I've said down here on my comments, I said they've done another placing, this time 30% discount the previous day. 10th placing they've done since December 22, and probably won't be the last. So I say avoid. Now, you give yourself the positive side of this, John, if you could.
Look, I like what they're doing. This is graphene. Graphene is the wonder material. I know the world has struggled to incorporate graphene into products, but we are seeing it happen now. We are seeing this cementine product that they have that's going into mortar and concrete. The first trials are really to do with 3D printing on construction projects. They're talking about housing, but I mean, it will be 3D printing on all sorts of construction. So walls for motorways, you know, embankments, those sorts of things. Those are the projects that will really benefit from very rapid 3D printing of, you know, where you can, you know, you just have a series of cement trucks that rock up. The cementine will have been added to the cement or the mortar mix, and then it literally gets pumped into place and 3D printed wherever you want it. Now, the great thing about graphene, and in fact it applies a little bit to graphite as well, but graphene's even better, is it makes the concrete so much stronger and it's much more weatherproof. So it's it becomes water resistant. That means your concrete structure doesn't have to be as big. You can use a lot less concrete and it should last you a lot longer. Now, these are really important factors in the construction industry. And I think the sooner everybody starts using this stuff, the better. So that's not the only thing that that's our owner working on. The other thing is the graphene inks for activewear, training shoes, you know, all sorts of areas where those graphene inks can be used. As is always the case, graphene will get used in, you know, in shall we say, less critical things to start with. But I think there's so much opportunity. I mean, we have heard now of certain additives going into lithium-ion batteries, coatings for battery lithium-ion battery anodes in Chinese vehicles. We don't know the details of it yet, but we think those are adding meaningfully to safety, to charging times, as in reducing charging times, and power capacity, as in power density. So I think this is just getting more, it's really getting there. I know it's taken ages, but I do think I'm a big fan of what Vesarion are doing. There are others doing it as well. And it just takes time to get these things to work out how to use it and to get them accredited.
Yeah, well, listen, the narrative, and of course, the potential of graphene, I mean, the narrative is sound. I understand that. But like you say, with all technology, it takes a long time to happen, to commercialize. And what is not sound is their balance sheet. And that's the trouble why they have to do increasing placings at, you know, discounts. And will they be around to benefit from the commercialization of graphene? That's what I'm thinking, because let's be honest, look at that. I did hold graphene. It did 10 back, when I first learned about it, and I bought a few, and it 10-bagged. I think one of my first or second 10-bagger. But now, you know, it becomes a level where, you know, you have to have maybe a graphene-based foundation to build a house on. But, I mean, you have to have a financial base sound to build a company on. And at the moment, they're struggling, aren't they? Their finances are tight, and I don't see how they can carry on. How can they fund these operations?
Justin, it's a fair point. Balance sheets are always risky areas. But yeah, I would draw an analogy here. Remember the first dot-com boom? A lot of stocks went up and then they came crashing down because we didn't know. We didn't use the World Wide Web in the way that we use it today. Now there are a lot more companies that have done brilliantly off the internet. And effectively, the second boom is very much bigger than the first one. I think this could be the same. And yeah, you're right. Not every company will survive through the cycle. But we are, as brokers to Vesarion, we're going to make sure, we're going to work hard to make sure it hopefully does.
Yeah, no, I can listen. Like I said, when interest rates were really low and raising money was easy, the story stocks, which had a compelling story, not just based in fantasy land, but, you know, had a sound backing to it, did really, really well. And I was largely invested in those companies. And they said, something 10-bagged. But now interest rates are high and it's hard to raise money. You know, I think you've got to focus on the numbers, not the narrative. And if the narrative is good along with the numbers, double whammy. But, I mean, at the moment, you know, just focusing on a narrative. I mean, it sounds good. It sounds amazing. But they say, like I said, what I'm worried about is that it's hard work for them raising any money. You know, I mean, the cash is tight. So I hope they do pull it off, because it sounds, you know, like I say, it'll benefit, you know, many building companies, many buildings. They're struggling, aren't they, financially? That's all. I mean, look at that.
I'm sure one way or another, these products are going to find their way into the marketplace. And maybe it takes 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. I think one day, This will be an absolute must-have. In fact, I suspect it'll become a regulatory requirement at some stage.
Well, hopefully. Marvellous, John. Thanks for that. Have a nice weekend. Any big plans for the weekend, John?
No, I'm still recovering a bit from the flu, as you are, Justin. So
We had to hook up. That's why we haven't done a video for a while. I want to hook up with you, and you said, I'm feeling awful. I'm feeling dreadful. I said, okay, let's get back, you know, meet back up and you're okay. And then, you know, but 3 weeks later... You come back to me and I said, I think I've caught what you've got. So I was coughing for like a week. I was aching all over, you know, and so I coughed. I was holding my head because it hurt so much. And it took nearly 2 weeks for me to stop coughing. But I don't know what the heck it was. But I'm feeling better now, and you're feeling better. So, besides, it's got a long tail on it. And I was almost like my wife says I'm a hypochondriac, but I was feeling dreadful. I thought I was going to die at one point. It was awful. And
there's nothing worse than man flu.
I know.
There's exactly. Nothing that is so misunderstood. But sadly, this isn't man flu. This is very real flu. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, and even when I got back to sort of doing some work, and I was always doing work, but I couldn't do as much. It took about sort of a week to get back to sort of 85%, let alone, because I think I'm health-wise, I'm down at like, 70-65%. I'm feeling dreadful. And I go, but you don't recover very quickly at all. It's very slow to recover,
Yeah, no, it is a bit of a slow recovery. And whoever gets it, they need to take it easy, because it will come back at you if you're not careful. Don't give it a chance.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, John. Speaky, next to monthly, probably.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.